Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's program. I'm Tracy McClure. Thanks for joining me. Coming up today, honoring the Church's heroes on the Feast of All Saints. And learn why St. Paul was thrown into prison in the next episode in our radio drama, To the Ends of the Earth.
La solennità di tutti I santi si è venuta affermando.
Pope Benedict XVI there, speaking Saturday in St. Peter's Square at a special recitation of the Angelus Prayer on the Feast of All Saints. He remembered the exemplary lives of the saints of the Church and about how each and every one of us can try to imitate them and Christ in our daily lives. Aside from the physical giving of one's life for Christ, the Pope remarked that martyrdom can also be understood as the spiritual giving of oneself to the Lord without reserve. All of the Church's baptized, despite their human limitations, says the Pope, are called to cultivate this rich and boundless love for the Lord.
To the celebration of the solemnity of all saints in heaven, to implore the intercession for the Church on earth, and to follow their footsteps in the way of holiness. May the prayers of the Blessed Virgin Mary and the saints strengthen us in faith and fervent hope in the fulfillment of Christ's promises. Upon you and your families I invoke the Lord's richest blessings.
They were and still are today the heroes of the Church. Those who lived by the teachings of Christ, and those who were prepared to give their very lives for Him. They are the saints of the Church, who over the last 2,000 years or so have offered an example to Christians of the virtuous way to the Lord's heart and to the kingdom of heaven. Though many of us can lose sight of it if it doesn't fall on a Sunday, each November 1st is a day set aside by the Church to remember and honor all of the saints, the famous and those hardly known down the centuries. Well, here today to reflect with us on this feast day is Father Bernard O'Connor, an official with the Pontifical Congregation for Eastern Churches.
Good morning.
Thanks for being here with us
today
with your wonderful smile and happy personality. Listen, October 31st, we have to start with that.
Oh, yes.
Halloween, the night of ghosts, goblins, and witches. And November 1st, though, is the feast for the heroes of the Church, the saints who represent all that is good and virtuous. Quite a contrast, don't you think?
Rather so. But you know, there's a wonderful point that's being illustrated here. Halloween literally means All Hallowed Evening. It's a sacred evening in preparation for the observance of All Saints. And on November 2nd, we have All Souls Day, and these must be taken together. But there's a theory in spirituality that is wonderfully appropriate, that when goodness is highlighted and emphasized in Christian life, evil cannot remain content. That evil will rise to the cause of trying to distort and devastate the holy. And in my honest estimation, the New Testament Church and thereafter were very, very conscious of the evil one and of temptation and devastation attempts at the good. So Halloween, in a certain sense, reflects that. If you are going to celebrate saints November 1st, be assured that that will be taken up as a challenge to you from forces that are motivated for causes other than the holy.
But are we giving our kids mixed messages with these fun, partying Halloween nights?
Again, look historically. Historically, throughout the early history of the Church, especially in the Middle Ages, it was connected to a spiritual reality. The mistake we've made and the double messages we send are separating ordinary, quote, secular life and the life in relationship to God. We've made the disconnect in our culture and society. And so naturally the young people are only going to see it as a festival of good time to kind of joke around, kid, and celebrate in whatever way they choose. It's just like Christmas. We've confused St. Nicholas with a Santa Claus. We have confused the Nativity of Christ with a winter solstice. And so consequently, by divorcing the holy from our ordinary reality, we've completely abdicated all presence for it.
If November 1st, the Feast of All Saints, if it doesn't fall on a Sunday, it's quite likely that people are not going to even realize that it's occurring. Isn't that a very sad reality today?
Oh, it's a tragic reality. When the Holy Father speaks about the issue of secularism and of relativism and these types of terms that he uses so frequently, what he's really saying is we are more and more living in a society which is not only heedless of the holy, but is becoming contemptful of the holy. And this, I think, is a serious tragedy. We can't expect ordinary Catholics to be mindful of the significance of All Saints and then All Souls when the poor souls can hardly have enough religious knowledge to make the sign of the cross.
Mm. How important is it for us to remember and honor the saints? I mean, if you pick up any book on the saints, you'll see it's full of hundreds and hundreds of names, and literally going back 2,000 years.
Absolutely, absolutely. But let's think of it in terms of your family history. You were just telling me a little while ago where your husband works and where your sister-in-law lives. And these are special relationships in your heart and in your history, as they are in mine and every listener. This is part of our family, and to say that the roots, the origins of significant people in our family history with relationship to us have lost their significance is pitiful, because we're created for relationship. So what these feasts are telling us is that the ongoing relationship with those who preceded us are every bit as intimate to our well-being as are our personal and family relationships, for they are our spiritual family. So great significance.
Whereas we cannot remember our dear departed, let's say, you know, mm-hmm. a mother or father, grandparents or friends who've died, we can't really pray to them. We certainly can look to the saints for help in our daily lives, can't we?
Very much. I like to tell people that the emphasis isn't so much on praying to as praying with. That in a sense of church as communion, those who we ask to pray for us, to pray with us, accompany us in our own spiritual journey. We see this illustrated wonderfully in the Angelus message for 2008, given by Pope Benedict, in which he reflects upon this continuity of relationship, of role models, of heroes, of persons whom we can look to and say, that's part of my tradition. This is part of my heritage. This is real and tangible. If I may, I'd like to just say that when we look at the lives of the saints, as you're talking about, to give them something of a quality of life, I like to use four terms. That the role of the saints with relationship to us represent incarnation. They make real our faith. They represent imitation, role models of faith. They represent inspiration, giving credibility and enhanced lovability, if you will, of the role models of the church. And then intercession. They respond to our prayer. They reach out to us, just as on All Souls Day, we will reach out on behalf of those whose journey continues toward a fulfillment of sanctity.
We can't, of course, finish this program without mentioning some of the great saints of the church.
There are so many. And people, I think, should certainly remember figures, throughout history, like Joan of Arc, St. Lawrence, the martyr, and so forth. But there are also recently canonized saints or persons proposed for sainthood, which can be a wonderful reminder of the problems that we face that they have also faced. I'm thinking of the canonized Saint Mother Alphonsa, the first saint to be canonized for India, a woman who knew intense physical and mental suffering, who spent most of her 36 years on a sick bed. Well, how many people can identify with that kind of tribulation? Many. I'm thinking of a lady who knew servitude and persecution. Abuse of women? Very common. Saint Josephine Bakita, born in Darfur in Sudan in 1869, but who literally learned when she discovered the gift of faith in Christ that she could go back to her captors and go back to the people who caused her enormous physical anguish and say, I have a gift for you. Now, there's an example of faith. Lorenzo Garrido, who died only in 1971 from Spain, and who was a journalist afflicted with various paralysis, with blindness. And despite the incredible intensity of his inflictions, every time one aspect of him was taken away, his use of his right arm, then he learned to write with the left. Then he lost both arms, so then he learned to dictate to his secretary. There was an ability to be creative and determined despite whatever hardship. And that is a wonderful message in our society, where we often feel so depressed and so overwhelmed. There is hope.
And a very warm thanks there to Father Bernard O'Connor, an official with the Pontifical Congregation for Eastern Churches. And now we present episode 21 in our series, To the Ends of the Earth, a program by Jill Bevilacqua, on the life of one of the Church's greatest saints, St. Paul.
The last episode told of Paul's delirium on the road to Assos, of his farewell to the elders of Ephesus, and the prophecy of Agabus regarding Paul's death. In today's episode, you will hear of the riot in the temple and the arrest of Paul, his address to the crowd and his defense before the Sanhedrin, and the discovery of a plot to kill him.
And so it was that Paul arrived in Jerusalem, and the disciples there gave him a very warm welcome. The next day, Paul went to visit James, and all the elders were present. After greeting them, he gave them a detailed account of all that God had done among the pagans through his ministry. They gave glory when they heard this.
It all sounds fine, brother, but what about the law?
The law?
Yes, yes. You see, brother, how many thousands of Jews have now become believers, but they're all staunch upholders of the law.
Yes, all of them. And they not only observe it themselves, but they want others to. Do you understand me?
I think I do.
Well, now, these converts have heard that you instruct all Jews living among the pagans to break away from Moses.
Yes, and that you tell them not to circumcise their children.
Or to observe the customs.
That is not quite the case, my friends. I have never tried to dissuade devout Jews from following the ancient customs. No. It's just that I prefer to leave converts from paganism free of Jewish observances.
How can they do that?
You'll never bring these people around to your way of thinking, Paul.
And you know why they don't like it, don't you, Luke? It's because this way, the Jew is no longer superior to the pagan.
Something must be done.
Yes, but what? These people are bound to have a meeting.
Yes, yes. You do understand, Brother Paul, don't you? I mean, in any case, they will hear that you have come.
So what's to be done?
Now, brother, just listen and do as we suggest.
Yes, yes, listen to our idea.
Now, we have four men here who are under a vow.
The Nazarite vow? Yes, I took it myself a few years back. Well?
Now, you know that it is an act of charity to help a poor man pay the expenses involved in this.
I know. So you want me to
take these men along and be purified with them and pay their expenses, so that they may shave their heads. This will let everyone know there is no truth in the reports they have heard about you, and that you still regularly observe the law.
Very well, friends. I shall do as you say. I'm always happy to help someone in need.
As for the pagans who have become believers, they have nothing to say to you.
No, indeed. And for our part, we have sent them our decisions, namely that they have no observance to practice, but that of abstaining from things sacrificed to idols, from blood, and from fornication.
Yes, yes. Absolutely. These are the laws they
must. And so the next day, Paul took the men along and was purified with them. And he visited the temple to give notice of the time when the period of purification would be over and the offering would have to be presented on behalf of each of them. The 7 days were nearly over
When some Jews from Asia caught sight of him in the temple and stirred up the crowd and seized him.
Look, there he is, that renegade.
Who, the fellow that was going round with that Greek?
Yeah, that Paul of Tarsus. He's a bad Jew, he is.
Hey, why don't we pretend he took that pagan into the court of the Israelites?
Yeah, get the fella thrown out of the temple. Yeah, come on, man. Hey, everyone, men of Israel, help!
Stop that man, that fellow over there. Get hold of him, someone.
What's the matter? What man?
That one there, who is he?
What's he done?
He doesn't look like a criminal to me.
Got him? There. Now then, what have you got to say for yourself, eh?
What's it all about? Who is he?
Why are you holding him? What's he done?
Just tell us what he's been up to.
You ask him. Bet you he won't be able to answer.
What have you done? Rifled the temple treasury?
He's lost his tongue, huh? I'm not surprised. You should be ashamed of yourself.
But what has he done?
It's about time they told us. It's no good condemning.
I'll tell you what he's done. You know who he is? This is the man who preaches to everyone everywhere against our people, against the law, and against this place. Now he has profaned this holy place by bringing Greeks into the temple.
Guards.
Have him arrested. Don't you hear? He brought a pagan into the temple.
No, this holy place. What on earth?
Scandalous, I say.
There's going to be a riot.
Look, look, the priest is closing the gates. Look,
they're closing the gates.
Don't let him out. Stop him.
The people seized Paul and dragged him out of the temple, and the gates were closed behind them. They would have killed Paul if a report had not reached the tribune of the cohort that there was rioting all over Jerusalem. He immediately called out soldiers and centurions and charged down on the crowd, who stopped beating Paul when they saw the tribune and the soldiers. When the tribune came up, he arrested Paul, had him bound with two chains, and inquired who he was and what he had done. People in the crowd called out different things, and since the noise made it impossible for him to get any positive information, the tribune ordered Paul to be taken into the fortress. When Paul reached the steps of the fortress, the crowd became so violent that he had to be carried by the soldiers, and indeed the whole mob was after them. Just as Paul was being taken into the fortress, he asked the tribune if he could speak with him. The man gave his consent, and Paul, standing at the top of the steps, gestured to the people with his hand. When all was quiet again, he spoke to them in Aramaic, and when they realized he was speaking in their language, the silence was even greater than before.
My brothers, my fathers, listen to what I have to say to you in my defense. I am a Jew, and I was born at Tarsus in Cilicia. I was brought up here in this city. I studied under Gamaliel and was taught the exact observance of the law of our ancestors. In fact, I was as full of duty towards God as you are today. I even persecuted this way to the death and sent women as well as men to prison in chains, as the high priest and the whole council of elders can testify, since they even sent me with letters to their brothers in Damascus. When I set off, it was with the intention of bringing prisoners back from there to Jerusalem for punishment. I was on that journey, and nearly at Damascus, when about midday, a bright light from heaven suddenly shone around me. I fell to the ground. I fell into a trance, and then I saw him. Hurry, he said. Leave Jerusalem at once. They will not accept the testimony you are giving about me. Lord, I answered, it is because they know that I used to go from synagogue to synagogue, imprisoning and flogging those who believed in you. and that when the blood of your witness Stephen was being shed, I was standing by in full agreement with his murderers and minding their clothes. Then he said to me, "Go, I am sending you out to the pagans far away."
So far, they had listened to him. But at these words, they began to shout, "Away with him, he's not fit to live." They were yelling, waving their cloaks and throwing dust into the air. And so the tribune had him brought into the fortress and ordered him to be examined under the lash to find out the reason for the outcry against him. But when they had strapped him down, Paul spoke to the centurion on duty.
"Is it lawful for you to flog a man who is a Roman citizen and has not been brought to trial?"
Hey, did you hear that, sir?
What's that?
This man, sir. He says he's a Roman citizen. Did you know that?
Roman citizen? You're a Roman citizen?
I am.
It cost me a lot of money to acquire this citizenship.
But I was born to it.
Centurion?
Yes, sir.
Unstrap this man, but keep him in custody till tomorrow. I want to know exactly what it is this Jewish mob has against him. I'm going to call the chief priests and the Sanhedrin. Tell the guards I shall need them. This man has a right to our Roman protection.
And the next day, since the tribune wanted to know what precise charges the Jews were bringing, he freed Paul and gave orders for a meeting of the chief priests and the entire Sanhedrin. Then he brought Paul down and stood him in front of them. Paul looked steadily at the Sanhedrin and began to speak.
"To this day, I have conducted myself before God with a perfectly clear conscience."
At this, the high priest Annas ordered his attendants to strike him on the mouth. But Paul spoke.
"You whitewashed wall, God will surely strike you. How can you sit there to judge me according to the law and then break the law by ordering a man to strike me?"
"It's God's high priest you're insulting."
"Brothers, I did not realize it was the high priest. For Scripture says, you must not curse a ruler of your people."
Now Paul was well aware that one section of the Sanhedrin was made up of Sadducees and the other of Pharisees. And so he said,
"Brothers, I am a Pharisee and the son of a Pharisee. It is for our hope in the resurrection of the dead that I am on trial."
As soon as he said this, a dispute broke out between the Pharisees and Sadducees, and the assembly was split between the two parties. For the Sadducees say there is neither resurrection nor angel nor spirit, while the Pharisees accept all three. The shouting grew louder, and some of the scribes from the Pharisees' party stood up and protested strongly.
"We find nothing wrong with this man. Suppose a spirit has spoken to him, or an angel."
Feeling was running high, and the tribune, afraid that they would tear Paul to pieces, ordered his troops to go down and haul him out and bring him into the fortress. The next night, the Lord appeared to him and said,
"Courage, you have borne witness for me in Jerusalem. Now you must do the same in Rome."
When it was day, the Jews held a secret meeting, at which they made a vow not to eat or drink until they had killed Paul. There were more than 40 who took part in this conspiracy, and they went to the chief priests and the elders and told them.
"We have made a solemn vow to let nothing pass our lips until we have killed Paul."
"Yes. And it is up to you now to..."
"You and the Sanhedrin."
"Yes, and the Sanhedrin. All of you. You must apply to the tribune to bring Paul down to you."
"Yes, as though you meant to examine his case more closely, see?
And as for us, well, go on. You tell them.
We are prepared to dispose of him before he reaches you.
But the son of Paul's sister heard of the ambush they were laying and made his way into the fortress and told Paul, who called one of the centurions and asked him to take the young man to the tribune, as he had something to tell him. So the centurion took him to the tribune and reported what he had heard.
Sir, the prisoner Paul summoned me and requested me to bring this young man to you. He has something to tell you.
He does he? Come here, young man. Now, what is it, young fellow? What do you have to tell me?
The Jews have made a plan to ask you to take Paul down to the Sanhedrin tomorrow, as though they were going to inquire more closely about him. Don't let them persuade you. There are more than 40 of them lying in wait for him, and they've vowed not to eat or drink until they've got rid of him. They are ready now. They are only waiting for you to give the order.
I see. Thank you for reporting this. Now you'd better go. But I warn you, tell no one that you have given me this information. Centurion!
Sir.
Get 200 soldiers ready to leave for Caesarea by the third hour of the night with 70 cavalry and 200 auxiliaries. Provide horses for Paul and deliver him unharmed to Felix, the governor. Dismiss.
Sir.
Now, where did I put my writing materials? Oh, here we are. Claudia Lysias to His Excellency the Governor Felix. Greetings. This man was seized by the Jews and would have been murdered by them when I came upon them with my troops and got him away, having discovered he was a Roman citizen. And desiring to find out what charge they were making against him, I brought him before their council, the Sanhedrin. I found that the accusation concerned questions of their law, the law of Moses, and a man called Jesus. But there was no charge deserving death or imprisonment. My information is that there is a conspiracy against the man. So I hastened to send him to you, and have notified his accusers that they must state their case against him in your presence. Farewell.
The soldiers carried out their orders. They took Paul and escorted him by night to Antipatris. Next day, they returned to the fortress, leaving the mounted escort to go on with Paul to Caesarea.
You have been listening to episode 21 of our radio drama, To the Ends of the Earth. Taking part in this episode were Arthur Baum, John Gayford, David Horton, Don Hodson, Clive Rich, Helen Sterling, and Veronica Wells. The sound engineer was Tommaso Pallottino. The programme was written by Jill Bevilacqua and produced by Sean Patrick Lovett in the studios of Vatican Radio in Rome.
And that concludes today's program. Thanks for listening. I'm Tracy McClure.
You've been listening to the English program of Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.